Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I want to thank everybody who came out to the Funny Bone in Albany, New York this weekend. Had a great time, great turnout. And if you want to see me do some stand-up this coming weekend, you can see me at the Hartford Funny Bone in Hartford, Connecticut, April 27th to the 29th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Go online for tickets, Hartford Funny Bone. And the following week, I'm going to be in Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, at the House of Comedy, May 3rd through the 5th. Okay? Now, I want to talk to you about my sponsor. Do not fast forward, okay? Sponsors are important. You know that I rarely had a sponsor, okay? And I only have a sponsor if I really believe in them and I really use them. I need a sponsor every once in a while because this podcast costs me money. And by having a sponsor, I get some money to give you great interviews and great guests. So I'm asking you to support the sponsor. Check it out. And then in turn, they can support me. The sponsor is deepdiscount.com. Great website. You'll find thousands of movies, TV shows at incredible prices. Click their logo on my homepage and you'll see what I mean. It's right there. Go to paulmercurio.com, click the logo. And all this month, be sure to look for special icons and coupon codes for even more savings on Blu-rays, comedy, and complete series too. First of all, I had a great ride back from Albany. I got SCTV The Early Years. So funny. Popped it in my computer, drove back. The time flew by. Plus, I didn't have to talk to my wife because that thing's kind of been over for about 8 years now. I mean, we love each other, but, you know, married. Anyway, and I got a T-shirt, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Very cool. And I got a little chest hair sticking out of the top right now, but we'll take care of that later. Look, buy the shows you want to watch and own them forever, okay? You'll find classics from back in the day and hard-to-find titles and new releases, too. Out this week? Oh, good movie. I saw this. It's intense, but it's great. The Hostels. It's the riveting Western drama set in 1892, starring Christian Bale as a legendary army captain who reluctantly agrees to escort an Indian war chief and his family through dangerous territory. Get your copy now on Blu-ray, DVD, and Ultra HD for a great price at deepdiscount.com. Just go to my website, paulmercurio.com, click on the logo, and it'll take you right to their site. Okay? Be good to yourself. Buy your favorites and support my sponsor too, because then they support me and then I can eat and my son can have clothes. Look, just check out deepdiscount.com. It's a great site and you're going to get some great stuff there. My guest this week is Goldberg, recently inducted into the Wrestling Hall of Fame, and he's now hosting a new show on the History Channel. Really cool. Something I watch. I've watched the previous series too. Enjoy the conversation with him. And check out deepdiscount.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Great guest this week. A WWE Hall of Fame inductee, former NFL player, and now the host of Forged in Fire, Knife or Death, which is on the History Channel, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Bill Goldberg. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Wonderful, my friend, and yourself?
I'm doing great. I am so excited about this show because I've been watching the original series, Forged in Fire. I just was tooling around one night, and it was on, and I was mesmerized by it. I don't know if you must have been a fan of that series before you got into this, I would imagine.
You know, I was, but not obviously to the extent that I am now.
Yeah.
The thing about me is that once people think I'm fully ingrained in doing something, I reinvent myself and pick something else up. And truth be told, and I'm sure many people can hear through the commentating, I mean, it's on the job training for me as far as learning about these knives. You never know, no matter what the subject matter is, you never know everything.
Right.
In this instance, I cannot know enough about what I'm viewing here. And so I've become a huge Forged in Fire fan in doing the due diligence to prepare for this show. So,
yeah, I mean, I was stunned myself when I first stumbled upon the show, and then the episode that I saw of your show. I mean, there's one point where like a knife blade breaks in half, and you could tell you're like, the knife broke in half. Like, you're really like shocked. And like, I could see in real time, you know, like just as entertained as us at home. It really comes through.
You know, I appreciate that. That's, you know, it's a very fine balance. You know, I was on social media earlier and someone was expressing, you know, their disdain for the lack of let's see here, the best way to put it, concrete knowledge of exactly what each of these contestants are wielding.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to explain to them that the hosting job is a team job, and it's filled with people from different walks of life with different backgrounds and different responsibilities and different expertise. And we try to find that balance. And our knife expert, Travis Wirtz, is a plethora of knowledge.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, I mean, he oozes information about these knives, and I'm just trying to soak it up as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Two Lamb is our weapons expert. So Two doesn't know the background about knives that Travis may. He knows real world application.
Yeah, I like it in the original series because he was usually the one that would, so it's chopping watermelons or like, you know, hanging pigs with this, and he
absolutely,
yeah. So I don't understand that comment on social media, because you want to have somebody like yourself who's knowledgeable but not the expert, but who knows how to host and has a great personality and draws people in with your excitement, and then you have your experts on either side of you. So I mean that to me is a disconnect. I think it's a really well done show.
I appreciate it. It's something to where I truly wanted them to capture the immediate reaction of Two and I, in that we've got differing backgrounds, and we've got the rah-rah, you know, pound your chest, testosterone backgrounds, both he and I.
Right.
But this is something that we're not experts in, and viewing it as an audience member, shows people how exciting it can be in real time, and we just want to convey that.
Yeah, and you know, you don't, like, if someone told you on paper Forged in Fire or your show, you think these people do the knives or these testosterone guys, they're very kind of scientific-y, I don't mean an insulting way, but these people that do these knives are on the, you know, even at times a little geeky, like they're really into the history, they'll know their stuff, and that's the thing that's really cool. Is I felt like in your show and in the series I've watched before, like I was learning something, like just when they stack the pieces of metal and then they heat it up. And I'm like, it just like, I had no idea they would stack pieces of metal to make a blade like that, you know, and then press it and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we're trying to do is at the end of the day, we're trying to make it cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be monotonous. It can be boring. And, it's a niche, people who forge their own knives. It's a small community, and we want to show how cool their little community is. And we want to expand into the general public to where somebody can watch this show and not be an expert about knives, but then be thoroughly entertained as to what they see, therefore wanting to learn more about the background of the people, you know, in the competition.
Yeah. I'm telling you, like when I was watching the series, I'd be like, to my wife, I go, that blade's going to break. Like we start having like a little side bet, like which of the, you know what I mean? Like
exactly.
It's like watching, and you listen, you're a professional athlete and a world-class wrestler. I mean, it's a competition, and you know, the guy's got the, or you know, if it nicks a little bit, you know, after they chop wood with it, it's like, you start predicting all these things are going to happen. You know what I noticed about your series in the first episode, there's a diversity to your contestants, which I thought was really cool. Was that must've been intentional, I imagine.
Well, that's the biggest draw that brought me to hosting the show.
Mm-hmm.
I hosted a show it was for the Speed Channel and for Spike TV years ago called Bull Run.
Mm-hmm.
The best part about Bull Run, the series that I did back in the past, was that it all of the contestants pretty much ran the gamut of many demographics. So therefore, if you tuned in to watch the show, whether you were relatable to the content or not, you were instantly relatable to at least one of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, therefore you could cheer for or against them.
Right. Right. You had, as a viewer, you had an immediate connection. And in this show, explain a little bit to the listeners. You have two different time courses. You have Knife Fight and Dead Run. and just explain a little bit how that works. So I thought that was really cool.
Well, the first course is all of the contestants go through knife fight first. It's probably, I think it's 10 obstacles varying in difficulty and varying in style.
Mm-hmm.
The top two out of the top two runs out of knife fight go on to the course outside, which is a very similar yet ramped up course compared to knife fight called Dead Run.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, the winner of Dead Run gets $2,000, a cash prize, and moves on to the championship showdown. Mm-hmm. And vies for a $20,000 cash prize.
It's a really well done show. What surprised you? Because I have noticed in reading up about you a bit that once you immerse yourself in something, you really immerse yourself in it. And what did you sort of learn about this world that surprised you or you thought was funny or interesting that you didn't expect?
Well, going back to the background of forging the knife itself, there's in watching these people compete and watching the difference in the blades that they bring, it's amazing to see how one stacks up against the other and then know the background of how that knife was forged.
Right.
And then what went into it, and just the heat treatment alone. It's a precise, skill. And I tell you what, it's pretty awe inspiring to watch. My wife is a blacksmith.
Oh, is that right?
And that's that, you know, now I get to learn from her and she gets to teach me a little bit about what's going on and what I'm seeing. And it's another cool thing that brings us together.
You know what it makes me is amazing too, is then they make the handle and then they go over to the shelf and they grab like a piece of wood and a piece of onyx and some metal. And then the next thing you know, they made this amazing handle. They're also like woodworkers too. It's pretty incredible.
It is. The creativity of these people at the end of the day is really awe-inspiring, and what they put into these blades and the love and the blood, sweat, and tears, and they're very proud of it. And to see these people compete with self-forged blades and then breaking them, I mean, it's heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it's like seeing your child get hurt or something. When you say, you mentioned at the beginning sort of you have this tendency to really sort of immerse yourself or really morph into sort of the thing that you're doing at the time. Were you always like that even as a kid, or did that something that you developed as a regimen and a discipline when you were an NFL player and then a wrestler?
I think I've always been like that. My father instilled, and along with my mother, the values of, you know, if you're going to do something, then you might as well give it 1,000% and try to be the best at what you do.
Yeah.
And what I've done in the past doesn't define me, and what I do in the future just adds to the repertoire, to the list of credentials of Goldberg. And I'm not a guy who seeks positive reinforcement for the amount of things that he's done. I'm just a guy who tries to be the best at whatever he does. And if it just so happens to be football at one point, or wrestling at one point, or commentating for mixed martial arts at one point, or now I'm commentating for a blade sport.
Yeah.
I put my name on my product, and if I'm going to be front and center, then I want to be the best at what I do.
Yeah.
And after watching the first episode, I got a long way to go. There's no question about it, but hopefully I've been able to put something out there for the first six episodes that is entertaining enough and cohesive enough and cool enough for people to watch and want more of. So every day is a struggle, and every day is an advancement towards learning more. So.
Yeah. You know, you said something about the quote of yours. You said, the tone we're trying to set is a heavy one. You have a big, burly ex-wrestler and an ex-Special Forces Green Beret, but we have no problem emasculating ourselves. The audience will feel comfortable with us, and we essentially magnify our shortcomings. You mean your own shortcomings as Goldberg and two, or you're talking about the contestants as well?
Oh, I mean all of the above.
Yeah.
I like to think that if in my mode of operandi is this. I believe that in the formation of my wrestling character, I looked at what was cool and what was trendy and what I liked. Mm. And at the end of the day, I thought that was a package that people, the masses, would enjoy. Mm. And I take that adage into everything that I do. Mm. And if I sound goofy, or if I, you know, because I scream because somebody broke their blade, but it's a natural reaction of myself as opposed to a staged reaction on a script.
Yeah.
I think people can relate to that.
Absolutely.
More so than, you know, just trying to sound like a tough guy all the time.
Well, you know, I do stand up and, you know, audiences are very emotionally astute. Like, you know, they can smell when someone's bullshitting them or faking it. And I think you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing more entertaining than watching somebody be entertained by somebody else. You know, if you're watching a good talk show, you become enthralled in the conversation between the two people because those two people are truly enthralled in that conversation. And I think that came through. And you know what I liked about too is like he has a very gentle way about him. But you also know that he could kind of, you know, kill you with two fingers, as the joke goes. But like when I noticed he'll give criticism, but in a supportive way, which I think is really cool.
It's very important for us to do that. It, you know, we're not there to make fun of anybody or emasculate anybody. We're, you know, and if you look at it and critique it, we're coaching these people.
Yeah.
You know, we want them to do well. I mean, they can hear us in the moment. And when they get out to Dead Run, you know, in the episode last night, I mean, we're yelling out instructions to better their performance.
Yeah, that's
not because it makes our show better, because we want them to succeed at the end of the day.
Yeah.
We all shoot for success, right? And I want the show to do really well. And I want, you know, for myself, for two, for the production company, for the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
But I want, in the day, I want these people to be proud of their performance. And if I can objectively yell something out that may help them, we do that. And I caught us doing that in critiquing, you know, our commentary last night.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And it just, and truly, like you said, you know, two's one of the most dangerous guys on the planet.
Mm.
And I like to put myself in that category also.
I will. I'd put you in that category.
the beauty of it is that we are extremely comfortable with ourselves. Therefore, being goofy, being emasculated, finding our flaws in front of a national TV audience, we're good with that. And I think that's an endearing quality.
Absolutely.
It can't be taught to somebody. You have to be that type of person to begin.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I think that's a positive, and I'm trying to help him bring that out.
And I was surprised, actually, that you guys, because usually hosts are supposed to be a quote unquote objective. And it was actually leading me to my question about you're an ultimate competitor, and you can read people, I'm sure, very well in terms of, you know, fellow competitors or somebody you're going up against. Can you tell, like, before the competition technically starts, like who you feel's got sort of that extra thing that's going to get them across the finish line first, so to speak, or given all your experience as a competitor?
Yeah. I mean, looking at somebody, well, we have the ability to pass judgment based upon certain criteria.
Right.
And that doesn't mean we're always right by any stretch of the imagination. A matter of fact, it means we're wrong a lot of the time in a competition that no one's ever seen before, that no one's ever gone through before. And we're seeing it as they are seeing it for the first time. So we can only make assumptions.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the times we're correct based upon, you know, logic and information, but we are surprised at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a really neat thing in that these people have never seen the course. We've never seen people go through the course.
Right, right.
We're all kind of learning the best way to go about it in real time.
Yeah. And when you talked about, you know, your wrestling career and your character, you know, I had Stone Cold on the show, and he talked about, it was fascinating to me how it paralleled what comedians do in a way, because he talked about going from little town to little town when he started out, and he'd try a character, and he'd listen to the audience, and here are they reacting, and he said, nah, that's not working, and he'd try. And it's exactly what comedians do. You go to town, and you try this material, and you see how they're reacting. Where did it start for you? And, you know, for those of you who may not know you or know of you, but don't have a lot of knowledge of you, obviously you have a ton of fans. How did it sort of start for you? And how did that character evolve over time, if it did much at all?
Well, therein lies the difference between myself and 99% of the wrestling population.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to come in as a professional athlete, though one that wasn't, you know, globally recognized.
Yeah.
With an idea that was hot, that proved itself through the embryonic state of mixed martial arts in the United States' popularity.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of based upon fact, and once you couple that with the intangibles that I had to begin with, I was lucky enough to pick a character and just kind of refine that same character throughout the years. Liken it to stand up.
Yeah.
That's like being able to do a set, go out and do a given set repeatedly night after night after right, night and right. Not really have to change it much. Just
right,
as they say in the knife world, you know, sharpen your blade and refine it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a huge advantage.
Mm.
And I only knew one character.
Mm.
Steve Austin was stunning. Steve Austin
right.
was a number of things before right. he was Stone Cold.
Right.
And, you know, it shows his ability to adapt, overcome, and know what the people want, and ultimately be, you know, arguably the most successful professional wrestler in the history of the world,
mm-hmm.
in my eyes,
mm-hmm.
And a great guy at the same time, which is one hell of a difficult thing to balance.
Yeah.
You know, I was very, very lucky. And I said in my Hall of Fame speech, I only knew the good times in wrestling pretty much. I was spoiled. I had one character. It changed a little bit along the way.
Yeah.
You know, I only knew the positive things and boom, I was out. So.
And in working with WWE and the powers that be there, it was a fairly easy process, I imagine, because you had this character. You were clear about what you wanted. They didn't really have a character. So there wasn't a lot of tweaking by them to what you wanted to do, right? You kind of, this is what I want to do? Or am I wrong about that? I don't know.
The first run I had with them was completely different.
Yeah.
But there were so many outside circumstances that molded the situation that I found myself in.
Yeah.
That, you know, it had to have happened the way that it did. I mean, 2 weeks after, I was an ass kicking machine in the WCW,
right.
And 3 weeks after I show up on television at the WWE, they put a wig on me. So, you know, there's a lot of negative backstory because, you know, as to why that happened and what they did with my character throughout the year.
Yeah.
But you know, that's old news.
And, yeah.
You know, that was my struggle at the time. It wasn't changing the character. It was preventing people from changing it.
Yeah.
But I stuck to my guns and I was pretty true to my character throughout.
Yeah, that's great. You know, when you got inducted, you tipped your hat to Brock Lesnar, which I thought was really nice. And you said, if it wasn't for Brock, it would not have happened, period. End of story. And you also went on to say Brock is a caring person underneath all that big, giant monster's body. So I thought that was really great how he made that difference for you. And you seemed, did that come as a surprise to you when it happened? Or was it, because I know you worked with him and some others to get to that place for WrestleMania, but how did that strike you as it was happening? Were you just like, I can't believe this is unfolding like this?
Well, I mean, after you make an exodus like I did in 2003, 2004,
mm-hmm.
and you go away for completely removed from the business for 12 years.
Mm.
And then because of a video game and someone's desire to to have another viable opponent. But I think underlying, you know, the main I don't know. Business is business.
Yeah.
And he needed somebody that was believable to come in. But the timing was right. They wanted me for the video game.
Right.
Years had passed. And you know what? Hey, ultimately, I truly believe that Brock wanted me to do this for my son.
Huh.
You know, Brock's got two boys.
Yeah.
Brock never took his son to a match before.
Well,
he did at Mania when he and I were there. And I think hey, nobody can tame that beast.
You know, right.
His wife can. But right. I saw a little different side of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a side that I don't want. Hey, it's like my relationship with Dale Earnhardt Sr. Okay. He was the intimidator and his image was portrayed as the ultimate bad guy.
Right.
But that guy did more stuff for charity, more stuff for kids.
Yeah.
More stuff for his community than anybody would ever know. And he doesn't want anybody to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Brock is similar in that respect, you know, because it takes away from his Godzilla, you know,
right,
image.
Right. Right.
And prior to me coming back to the WWE, I never wanted to have my family involved with anything that I did because it was a chink in a monster's armor. It was the storyline. It was completely based upon my family, my emergence back in the business.
Right.
So it
right.
had to be part of it.
Right. You know, it's funny you talk about, you know, showing all sides of yourself because this great quote of yours, you said, I use my comedy chops every day when dealing with my wife and son. And is it just how so? Just sort of trying to relieve tension through comedy? You know, we all have it in our house with kids and wives and all that stuff. But how does that come about? How do you do that?
Oh man, you gotta have the ability to laugh every day.
Yeah,
you know that more than anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
All my comedian friends, you know, they say the same, and you know, it's a conduit to happiness.
Yep.
And you can't take yourself too seriously. And when I'm emasculated by an 11-year-old boy and a 115-pound woman who got more balls than 99% of the guys that I know, because her first stunt was jumping off a 90-foot waterfall.
Jesus.
As a stunt woman.
Oh, she was a stunt woman. Cool.
I live in a very entertaining world. And, hey, man, she has... the last two times I left town, we acquired two new dogs.
Yeah.
You know, she leaves town, and an hour before she leaves town, she hands me a goat that was born 4 hours prior, and I had to bottle feed the thing until she got back into town 4 days later.
Please tell me you have a picture of you. Hang on. Tell me you have a picture of yourself bottle feeding a goat. Is it out there? I want to see it. Put it on.
It's on my phone. There's no doubt.
Come on, put it on social media.
You know, so I'll put it out there one day.
That's great.
But it's you have to look at life in a different way. You can't take everything too seriously, especially when you've been running around in your underwear in front of everyone.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's a great career and a great story, and what we can expect more of the same of what we've seen already with the show, but I'm sure it's going to continue to get interesting every week as we go along here. I imagine.
Yeah, it's going to get crazy. I mean, it was great that let's put it this way. If you were Spielberg writing the movie, then you couldn't have planned it any better than this season is going to play out.
Oh, is that right?
The first episode is won by a professional chopper, right? So a guy that everybody thinks is going to be able to come out because of the background. It's the only thing that's similar out there to our competition. So you would think that these people could come right on and destroy everybody.
Right.
Well, just tune in and watch what happens.
All right.
That's all I got to
say. That's great. Well, you know, what's great about the show, and this show's carrying it along, is it exposed me to a world I had no idea existed that there were these people out there that made these blades, and they know the history of the blade going back to the 1400s and this and that. So you're learning something about history. You're learning about what these blades and swords and weapons meant at the time they were used. And then you're just watching these artisans, and they're like artists, kind of go to work. And then that's kind of entertaining. Just like, you know, sometimes you see a guy who almost passes out from the heat, which is a little like you feel bad, but there's that part too. That, but the whole thing is great. And I can't encourage people enough to watch. It's Tuesday nights. It's 10 PM on the History Channel, Forged in Fire, Knife or Death. And it's Bill Goldberg, the host of that show, Hall of Fame inductee into WWE. Just great talking to you, man.
It is an honor and a privilege, my friend, to tell the story.
Yeah.
It's a cool one, and hopefully people tune in and ride along with us.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I think it's great. I hope you have many successful seasons with it. All right, thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, my friend.
All right. That's my man Goldberg. Really cool guy. Really cool show. I love that. The early series that they had, the first series, and now this series takes it up a notch. Check it out. Check me out. Hartford Funny Bone, April 27th to the 29th, May 3rd to the 5th, Phoenix, Arizona, House of Comedy, and check out deepdiscount.com. There's a lot of cool stuff. See you guys next week. Thanks.